We have these kids singing up here, and they start singing about gators, you know. This is seminal. I find that highly offensive. I don't even know how it got through. Got through the Westtown, you know, factory here. That song was okayed for worship. My heavens, something has gone awry. I feel deeply offended. No, it was great. Those kids, I get to teach them a Bible story each Friday. And I tell you what, man, that's the song that we end on, the alligator song. And they're just awesome. It's just awesome to watch these kids sing to the Lord without a care in the world, right? Without a care. They're just singing from their hearts. And when Jesus comes and he says, look, I want you to have a faith. I want you to have faith. And when you have faith, I want you to stare at the kid and have faith like that. What would it mean for us to have faith like a child? Because if you become childlike in your faith, you know, you will do things because you walk by faith and not by sight. And so what we've been looking at is this Hall of Fame. Has anybody ever been to Cooperstown, New York? One of my favorite places. I've been there a few times. And there's nothing like, for me, as a kid, Mike Schmidt was on my wall. Michael Jack Schmidt, right? The MVP of the 1980 World Series. This is my hero. And there's his bust in Cooperstown, New York. And there's Pete Rose and, you know, Hank Aaron. I mean, all these players that could do things that not a lot of people could do. They had extreme talent or extreme endurance, Cal Ripken. They did things that were distinct. And so here, you know, we've had this whole letter, first 10 chapters. And then all of a sudden we come to chapter 11. It's like, oh, let me give you some examples. Let me point out, right, the leader in home runs or the leader, you know, in pitching ERA. Let me show you who these men and women are. And so last week we talked about Abraham, or excuse me, about Noah. And this week, we're going to look at Abraham, right? Father Abraham had many sons, and many sons had Father Abraham. This is who we're going to look at. He is the father of many nations, right? He is the father of Israel. And so we begin with Hebrews 11. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going, right? So if you're a kid and your dad says, hey, pal, get in the car. We're going. We're leaving. When you love your father, when you feel free around your father, you hop into the car without a thought. Where are we going? Doesn't matter. Really, I just want to be with my dad, right? Oh, I want to be with my mom. Let's go wherever we need to go. And that is exactly what Abraham did. This is from Joshua 24 in reference to that chapter. Joshua said, this is later on, this is what the Lord God of Israel says. Long ago, including Terah, the father of Abraham and Nahor, lived beyond the Euphrates River and worshiped other gods. So God called Abraham from where? So I'm just going to show you a quick map, right? Down here, Ur of the Chaldeans, right? Essentially modern-day Iraq, right? Where the Tigris and the Euphrates are. Why is that important? Obviously, in an agrarian society, if you have a couple of major rivers, you have food. And that's a big deal. And so God said to Abraham, like maybe he would call us, I know you're comfortable. I know you have a 4-3. And you live in the Eagles, or you live here, or you live there, and you have a pretty good income, and you seem stable, and your kids are pretty well-behaved, your marriage is solid. I know you have that, Abraham, but I want to make you great, right? I don't want you to just be good, right? I want to make you great. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to call you to come out of Ur of the Chaldeans. You're going to stop up in Haran, and then you're going to come down to what is Shechem, or essentially what is Canaan or present-day Israel. And here's what I want to do. I want you to look at the beach, right? The sands of the seashore, and I want you to look up at the stars of the sky. That's the amount of kids you're going to have. And you're going to have so much influence. And I'm not just going to take that one city. I'm going to build it. And I'm going to take Canaan, and here's what I want to do. I want to kind of redo what we lost in Eden. I want to redo, and I want to make Canaan, right? I want to make it all over the world. So when Jesus says, starting in Jerusalem, right, the center of Israel, to Judea, to Samaria, to the ends of the earth. That's what I want to do. Abraham, you're going to be the starting point, and I want to replicate you. I want to replicate Israel. We know Israel becomes the church. In other words, he wants the church to expand and have this massive influence. But if you live by faith, here's what you can't do, right? Is you can't do this. Let's go. You cannot trust in circumstance. And many of us, we spend our entire lives, right, trying to control circumstance. You can't, right? Some people love right now the circumstance that has happened. Other people hate the circumstance that has happened right now. But here's what we know. It will change. Whether you see it as a good thing or a bad thing, whether you want to stop time and say, I never want my circumstance to change, or you are begging God to trust or to change your circumstance, you cannot believe in that. And some of us live for circumstance. And we don't live by faith. It's so counterintuitive because I want to see it. That's how I know, because I'm logical, right? I'm an empiricist. I use rationed thought. So why in the world, right? Why in the world would you have a young guy with three kids say, you know what? I'm gonna ask people to help fund this, take a lot of my own, thousands of dollars, and here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna travel to Taipei. And in the middle of a pandemic, I'm going to sit in a hotel for 2 weeks, right? What is that going to be like with my kids? I can't go out of this one hotel in Taiwan for 2 weeks. And then I'm going to go through all this hassle and I'll jump through all these hoops, hopefully so that what? So there's this young kid, Caleb, right, that can come and have a home. Why in the world would anybody do that? We know Morgan and Jennifer and the three boys, they're doing great, right? They live a comfortable life. God is using them. They are successful. But they both said, no, I don't want to do that. I am not going to stay comfortable. And maybe that's what you've decided. Maybe that's why God has you here this morning, is that you've decided, no, here's what I worship. I worship this circumstance I am. And the whole story of Abraham is about you cannot do that. You have to continue to ask God, what do you want from me? I know how to live by sight. I don't know how to live by faith. God, continue to lead me. Put people in my path, right? We are believing. This is the craziness about what we do on Sunday mornings. We have come and we just sang to an invisible God. No one can see God. We had these kids lead us in singing to God about how great he is. And we believe that these ancient words have been preserved, and they were the words of God, and they are timeless. How crazy does that sound? The world looks at that and says, what are you doing? And what we believe by faith, that the word of God changes the world. And when you look at the story of Abraham, it is all about him being comfortable, him doing very well. We know Abraham was a rich man. And probably owned a lot of land and a lot of cattle, which means, I tell you what, his 501k, it was funded, man, right? I mean, he quit his job and he's living off the interest. And all of a sudden, God says, no, I'm going to take you, and I don't care what you think the future would be. I'm going to take your life. And so some of you would say, God just ruined his life. Some of you look at this and say, what in the world is God doing? He just ruined this great American story of, you know, building himself up and, you know, whatever. And that's not the story. That's not the story that we're called to live. Because some of us come to Christianity, and maybe you're even coming here this morning, and you're asking yourself, will Christianity work for me? That's the question you ask. Will it work for me? The problem is that's the wrong question. Because many people who ask that question, that you'll get offended by this idea that Christianity calls you to worship and to believe that a Jewish carpenter is the Son of God, and he is fully human and he's fully divine. And that is not, that doesn't make any type of logical sense. And you say, will it help me? Will it help me get the inner strength that I need, Frank? Will it help me meet my goals? But I think the question you have to ask first is this: is it true? Not will it help me? Because if you just ask that question, what are we? We're ultimate pragmatists. Instead, we ask what? Is it true? I have to find out whether the God of the Bible is really there. I have to figure out if Jesus Christ was really, there was really a historical Jesus. And when you start there, you don't ask yourself anymore, will Christianity work? You realize, oh, this is about, I'm not the center of my world. God is the center of my world. That's the way I was created. God is the center of everything. I'm not. And what I've begun to do is I begin to put myself in the center. So what was great about this weekend, right? So we had this men's retreat. 40 guys went up to Brooksville. And Friday night, you know, I got two great conversations to hear about fellas in their process of God leading them to the woman that they were supposed to marry. Changed their paradigm. I said, you know, I thought about, what is it in it for me? It better be like this. Instead of thinking, you know what, God, what is it for you? How can I please you? And so God in his providence, all of a sudden you see that when they took their hands off that process and gave it up to God, everything changed. In fact, one had his Japanese tutor. We have one guy, you got to know your wife through a Japanese tutor? I'm like, are you telling me right now you speak fluent Japanese? He's like, yeah. I'm like, all right, I'm intimidated right now. You speak fluent Japanese. It's just weird to me. And God would use your Japanese tutor, right? To bring you to your wife? He goes, yeah, you know, you let go and you see what God does, and he works in weird ways. I'm like, that is different. But it was awesome because they said, you know what? His loving kindness is better than my life. It's when you're free enough to say that my life doesn't matter. It's not about me, it's about him. And that's what Abraham did. That's why he's in the Hall of Faith. He did something that so many of us could never do. We can't make that transition, right? I mean, the guys, they hit 300 who make the Hall of Fame. They have to learn to hit a curveball. Are you kidding me? They still get out 7 out of 10 times, but those are the guys that are in the Hall of Fame. It is so hard, what? To live by faith and not to live by sight. And some of us want to twist Christianity into what? Into our own image. But then it goes on, not just to trust in what? Not to just trust in circumstance. What? I mean, because if we do that, let me tell you this, that in and of itself cures a lot of evils in our lives, if we refuse to trust in circumstance. Because it really doesn't matter, good or bad, no matter what you saw this week about who our president or who's in power, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's a dynamic, and of course it has influence, but ultimately, our hope is not in that. It is in the Lord who is Jesus, who is King over all. And so we live that way, but then here's what he wants to do. He wants to give you even more leverage. So he goes, versus the next verse. By faith again, right? He kind of builds on what we just read. By faith, he what? He made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the what? He was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And by faith, even Sarah, this is his wife, who was very old, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and the countless sands on the seashore. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on the earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had the opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Here's what we need to remember. If you want even more leverage to live for him, is this, that you are not home. We are never home. Even when you go home, you are not home. You were not what? You were not made for this what? Broken world, for this fallen earth. How many times do we forget that and we say, no, you know what I'm going to do? I am going to make my heaven. This will be heaven, right? It's going to be great. I promise you. Here's what we're going to do. It's funny because, you know, we go on this retreat and, you know, you think, okay, we're going to get away. It'll be great, you know. And then, you know, it's Friday night and, you know, Lakewood Retreat Center, I think their interior designer went for like a 1971 rustic, less is more, you know. That's kind of the old mantra that you felt when you walked into these cabins, right? Like, I mean, there's really, I don't even know how you could say less there. There's nothing is more, I guess. But you think, okay, you know, it's you know, I'm going to go in here, and I'm a night owl, so I was up late with a bunch of fellas being very, very manly, eating Funyuns and Doritos. It was a powerful time. Don't want to test my breath after that. But after a long night of eating those great foods, ready to, you know, knock off, and I go in there, and then, you know, you kind of get up on. I slept on the top bunk, guys. Just so you know, I slept on the top bunk this Friday night. It was very exciting. And they have that old school pad, right? And it feels like, you know when you're really hungry like I am and you go to 7-Eleven, you got to get an egg salad sandwich from 7-Eleven, right? You have that cellophane, right? You pull that cell. That's what it was like when you put your body on it and you lifted it up. You just felt that same sound, right? That same sound of opening that sandwich thing came up, right? Every time. And then you're about ready to fall asleep and then you know, it's all fellas, right? And they were tired and they were probably, most of them were in REM, I guess. And, you know, it's like, you know, you start hearing that and then you get that lower sound. I'm like, am I hearing a C minor chord here? If you listen to all these snores here? And you're just like, you know, and then, you know, it kind of quiets down. You're like, oh, finally. And then sure enough, man, I'm not going to say who. He might be sitting in this room right now. I'm not going to point him out. He is actually, in fact, sitting in this room. But I tell you what, you think, okay, God, you know, this is a retreat, right? You're going to show up and it's going to be you, man. You're going to be here. And then you realize, you know what? We are not home, right? We are not home. And if you know that and you can live like that and you don't demand that your part of the world become home, and you know what? You have a place that's coming to you. Because here's what the Bible says. We have a dual citizenship. We are citizens of the earth, but if you know Christ, you are a citizen in heaven, of heaven. And here's what we know, that Jesus prays for heaven to come down to earth, and that's what's promised. Read the last book of the Bible. Read the last two chapters. What is it? It's all about heaven, your citizenship being fully integrated. It's about the heaven that comes down and integrates with this world. So will we be in Scotland at a pub one day? I sure hope so, right? But it will be perfected, right? Everything, right? The crooked will be made straight, the rough places plain. And if you can remember that you are not home, tell me that can't give you some leverage. No, I'm not made for this. I can help pull heaven down. And so that's what I felt. So we're there in this small little room, and we just had Jimmy playing a guitar, and it was a smaller room, and it was probably 1981 linoleum, right? And then it was Paulie on the box drum. And 40 fellas in a room, right? In the middle of the woods in Brooksville, Florida, just singing to the Lord. I thought, okay, God, I'm not home, but this is a small flash of home. Here are these fellas that took time away from their families, right, to come and what, be together and praise God. I thought, okay, this is a picture of living by faith. We are singing, a bunch of fellas are singing to an invisible God. God, we have a story to tell. We can live by faith. But part of that is remembering what? Is remembering that we are not home. And if we do that and we don't look at the circumstance, and we're not home, how much money you make, does it matter ultimately? Does it really matter if you don't get that promotion? Does it really matter if your life is more what? Is more, you know what, I'm going to engage in my marriage. And it's complex because I've got some skeletons I got to tell my wife, or I got some skeletons I got to tell my husband. But you know what? I'm not made and I'm not home yet, and I can't do that because my life is not about me. I know I want to engage with my son or my daughter who is the prodigal right now, and I don't want to. But you know what? My life is not by sight. It's not for my comfort. It's not for my security. It's for the Lord's fame. And I want to do that. These were the men and women that were placed in the hall of faith because they were willing to what? Like Jesus asked every one of us to do, count the cost. Count the cost. Before you would ever become a Christian, count what it's going to cost you. And that's, you know, that's what we see. And then ultimately, here's what we know is God said, look, here's what I want to show you. I want to show you that ultimately what your rock is it's on my performance, right? It's on my performance. And that you will get into heaven. Your resume, right? Your SAT score that you give to Jesus and say, okay, am I accepted? I mean, you do not have to do. We saw Aunt Becky, right? Aunt Becky from Full House goes into jail. Why? Because she took... There was a false, it was, I don't know exactly what happened, to get her girls into University of South California, USC. And I was thinking about that as I was reading that story. I think she just went to jail for 2 months or something like that. And this Aunt Becky, man, I remember watching her. And she was thinking, I need to fake it, right? And the whole story of the Bible is God saying this, here's what I'm going to do for you. So that you don't have to die, I'm going to send my one and only son. And that's how much I love you, that I would do that. In other words, you do not have to submit your resume, your SAT, and your grades to Harvard. Here's what I'm going to do for you. I am going to take my perfect SAT score and my perfect grades, and I'm going to submit that to Harvard. And it will be perfect, and you will get in. And because you cheated and there is a penalty, you know what I'm going to do on top of that? I'm going to take the penalty. And so Aunt Becky gets out if she believes in Jesus, and he goes into jail, and he suffered death for us. That's what the gospel is. It's not only do we get a perfect record, but the punishment that we're supposed to have comes upon Jesus. Unbelievable. Unbelievable that ultimately we would believe that he would die for us, but not only that he would die, that he would defeat death. And so here's what we have. This is the last little few verses right here. By faith, some of you know this story. When God tested him, God said, I want you to give me your son. And remember, that was the whole promise. Sarah was old, Abraham was old, and Abraham goes, you know, kind of takes a side route, sleeps with his maid wife or maidservant, and they have Ishmael. And God says, you're not acting in faith. I told you Sarah would be the mother of your son. And they come together at their old age, and they have Isaac. And through Isaac, you know, we know, comes, but God said, I need to know that you would actually give him up. When God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. And here it was, Abraham not living by sight. Even the thought of the death of his own son, that God said, would you sacrifice your own son? He knew that through Isaac would come, because through him and then Isaac and then what? And then Jacob and then Joseph would come Israel. Abraham reasoned, because he lived by faith, that God could even raise the dead. And so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death. He was willing to take Isaac up to the mountain, right? That's the same mountain where the temple's built on. You know that, right? That's where King Solomon built the temple, right on that top of that mountain, right? Where the sacrifice was made. Abraham realized, you know what? If God promised that through me, I can't live by sight, even the thought of my own son dying. Obviously, he's going to bring him back to life, because God's that big. That's the type of faith he had. That's how he lived. Where is your hope? Let me ask you that. Because these were Christians that were oppressed, and they were nervous. Some of us feel very uncertain right now. You feel very uncertain. And you have to ask yourself, okay, where do I place my faith? That's the offer of Christianity, is that you can go, right? You can go regardless of your circumstance. If you know ultimately that you're going to what? To the heavenly city, right? To the garden city, where the Garden of Eden is going to be made into this garden city where there'll be beautiful rivers. And you know, we talked about it last week, where the lion lays down with the lamb. Where the three-year-old, where our preschoolers, it says, will play with cobras, because no one, right, there will be no biting, there will be no poison. It will just be perfect. Everything will be glorified. If we believe in that new heavenly city, which I know sounds cartoony to some of you, I get that. But when you really think about what does it look like, right? What is my life leading to? Where is my anchor? We say, okay, the anchor is the love of God. And just like we said with Noah last week, let the waves come. Let the storm come. I will hide in the ark of my God. I will hide in the person of Jesus. I will believe in what? The promise that was given to Abraham. When you do that, and you study yourself until you weep, right? When you decide, I'm going to pray until I feel something. Not pray until I get bored. I'm going to pray until I feel something. When you understand that, when you act, because you know ultimately it's true, and I'm not just going to believe in God, I'm going to believe God. When we do that, we live great lives. We live Hall of Fame faith lives. These are not perfect men and women, but they legitimately lived out a life of believing in what they cannot, what they could not see. There was an anticipation and a surety that married each other. And that's what true faith is. And they live that out. Where are you? I mean, what's your anxiety level, right? Where's the needle right now? Where's your peace level? Where's the needle on that monitor or meter in your life? He wants it to be so high. He wants you to be peaceful. That doesn't mean that you won't feel struggle, but it will mean that you have a underlying foundation. That he says, when you pray, you will receive a peace that will transcend even your understanding, right? Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he's going to make your path straight, right? Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. So where are you? He says, circumstances will always change. Don't trust in them. We are not home, but we look forward to our heavenly home. And it's all, the anchor is all about the love of God. What is your leverage? So let me pray, and let me ask God to bless his word, and then we will continue to worship him in singing. Father God.